This is Dean Kuntz. Welcome to my podcast. I've spoken before on these podcasts about some Hollywood experiences, and another one has occurred to me I thought you might enjoy hearing. For some reason, I continue doing screenwriting after this experience, but I don't do it anymore after some even worse ones. And it's hard to believe there could have been one worse than this, but I wrote a screenplay based on my own novel, Midnight, for a couple of producers that I had considerable respect for. And strangely enough, based on the first draft, the studio greenlighted the script. Now, if you know this business, they do not greenlight scripts on a first draft. They may greenlight it in draft number 312 when you're ready to kill everybody involved. So I was astonished and set back, but the producer said to me, nope, they mean it. You're going to have to do another draft for the director and probably a polish, but they want this filming by October, and we were in early spring. So that's not a lot of pre-production time. And they immediately launched into a list of directors to send me to see if there were any I was particularly enamored of or any I had that I would like to keep off the list. And they sent me a list of 26 directors who they had actually approached and sent the script to. And they had told me that 26 of these are not going to want to do this. We'll be very fortunate if three want to do it because directors are very picky. But what actually happened was 18 of them came back and said they would be interested in doing this. So this looked wonderful to me. I thought, oh, we're going to get a wonderful director because a number of these 18 were terrific directors. But instead of picking any of the 18 that they had sent the script to and had come back with a positive note, the producers picked another director whose previous movies had gone straight to video. And they sent me to speak to him on the telephone. And I had a 45-minute conversation with him on the phone in which he was, for the full 45 minutes, completely incoherent. On the phone, he told me he wanted a script that was pumped up to ensure the project would be the bloodiest, sexiest, craziest-ass movie ever made. Now, this was not a bloody story. It was not a sexy story. And it might have seemed crazy to some people, because some people do think I'm crazy, but it didn't seem crazy to me. So I was a little bit worried now that this was not going to be the ideal director for this project. And then he told me he wanted to emphasize the themes of incest and cannibalism. And I noted to him that there were no themes of incest and cannibalism in the novel. And he said, so we'll put him in, and then we'll emphasize the shit out of him. So I called the producers, and they said, he's an eccentric genius. We know how to control him. Well, I had been told before, this guy was not a particularly young director, he was middle-aged, but I had been told before about young directors that I was given for my projects, he's the next Spielberg. That never turned out to be true, and they didn't tell me here that this guy was the next Spielberg, but they did tell me he was an eccentric genius. So they talked me into having a meeting with him. It took 2 months to set up the meeting because he was too busy for it. This was a director who films had gone straight to video. So what he was doing for these 2 months, I couldn't imagine because I was available. These very busy producers were available. But finally, we got a 90-minute meeting with him. And during this 90-minute meeting, this genius excused himself to go to the bathroom 7 times. He came back from the bathroom with the residue on his nose that made you think, if you were naive, that he was eating powdered sugar donuts in the bathroom. But I figured there was some other substance that he was dealing with. And he spoke in this meeting of the incestuous, sodomizing, fascist bastards who would be exposed and held up to scorn by the movie. There were no such things in my book, and I had no idea what he was talking about. He envisioned, he said, quote, massive, gut-ripping machine entities blasting through buildings with such dynamic realism will blow the heads right off the audience. There are no such scenes in my novel. I pretty much kept quiet. It didn't seem like there was any point in my saying anything. And at the half-hour mark in the meeting, he looked down at his shoelaces, which were untied. They had been untied when he entered the meeting. And he gave me a sort of baleful look, and he said, do you know about this? I wasn't sure what he meant, but he was looking at his shoelaces again. And I said, no, I didn't know anything about it. I didn't realize at that moment that he suspected I had tampered with his shoelaces. But not 10 minutes later, he notices untied shoelaces again, and he leans forward in his chair, frowning down, and he says, this again. I sort of visioned this guy as being plagued by gremlins, or at least feeling that he is. And then as he was leaving this meeting, he caught sight of these loose shoelaces again, and he gave me a look of high suspicion, and he said, okay, enough of this. So I guess he did suspect me of untying his shoelaces, and perhaps repeatedly. And he scowled, and he pointed a finger at me, and he said, I have to know where you stand. Do you want this to be an effing, and he didn't say effing, do you want this to be an effing Muppet movie? And no, I assured him I didn't want it to be, and he said, I hate those cute, furry-ass little bastards. And then he departed, and I was left alone with the producers. So I expect we're all going to burst into laughter simultaneous. And I said, what are we going to do about this? And they gave me blank looks. And they said, do about what? And I said, did you make any sense of that meeting? And they said, well, he's a genius. We can't expect to understand everything he says. And I said, first of all, I didn't understand anything he said. And secondly, geniuses tend to be more effective communicators than the rest of us. And they said, no, geniuses usually don't make sense to the rest of us until we see their work. And, of course, we'll understand the genius that it embodies, like Mozart or Andrew Lloyd Webber. They actually said that, Mozart and Andrew Lloyd Webber in the same reference. Well, I said, I don't think I can work with this director, and you're going to have to get another writer. This caused a huge uproar because the screenplay was greenlighted. And if they bring in a new writer, the green light will be pulled, and they'll have to get another script by that writer and go back to it. So it was a big lunch meeting between my agent and I and these producers in which I was going to be persuaded not to leave the project, but I couldn't be persuaded because I wasn't going to spend a year of my life in a room with this director. And they actually told me at the end of the lunch in the studio commissary, you will never work in this town again. And it was said in the worst angry tones. I did work in the town again, but the director eventually didn't work very much more in the town again, and that movie was never made after 2 or 3 years of development with a lot of other scripts. That's one of my Hollywood stories, and somehow I still continued to do screenwriting for a while. And if you want to know more about me, my books, why don't you come to the website, deankuntz.com. Thank you.